Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
After Ian, Florida homeowners face a difficult choice whether to rebuild or move.
For these folks, it's really tough to rebuild because they have to rebuild the entire structure to these new codes, requiring them to build something that's a lot more resilient, but also a lot more expensive.
And Goldman Sachs reports a drop in quarterly profit, but bets on a big restructuring. Plus, how freelancers can hike their rates without upsetting their clients. It's Tuesday, October 18th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. The European Union is pushing for an emergency cap on natural gas prices as part of a series of proposals aimed at staving off high prices for consumers and securing supplies for the winter. The EU's executive arm, the European Commission, said other conditions would need to be met, including assurance that gas flows among EU countries aren't interrupted and that gas consumption doesn't rise in response to the cap. EU leaders plan to talk about the proposal in Brussels later this week. We'll have more on this story on our AM edition of What's News tomorrow morning. Goldman Sachs, the latest big bank to report earnings, says its profit fell 43% in the third quarter, due in large part to less deal-making on Wall Street. That beat analysts' expectations. The bank also confirmed a major reorganization that we reported earlier this week. The plan includes combining its investment banking and trading businesses into one unit and its asset and wealth management into another. Wall Street Journal banking reporter Charlie Grant says the firm is trying to highlight its businesses that perform well regardless of markets.
Goldman's wealth management and asset management businesses earn fees, you know, no matter the market conditions. The theory is that Wall Street will pay more for businesses like that, and this structure will allow Goldman to show the growth of those businesses more clearly to investors and hopefully will help boost the valuation.
Six major banks posted a drop in profit in the third quarter, with Goldman reporting the sharpest decline. And in a sign that CEOs could be preparing for a recession, four banks, J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo, set aside a combined nearly $2 billion to cover possible bad loans. Netflix, reporting earnings after the bell, said it added 2.4 million new subscribers in the third quarter, far exceeding its expectations of adding a million. That reversed two straight quarters of losses, giving the company new momentum as it embarks on two strategic pivots. The streaming giant is launching an ad-supported tier next month and is working to crack down on password sharing among users, both in an effort to bolster revenue and its subscriber base. Amazon workers in upstate New York have voted against forming a union. The vote is a setback for labor activists who won a landmark unionization vote this spring at a warehouse on Staten Island. The National Labor Relations Board said about 66% of employees who cast valid ballots at an Albany warehouse rejected the Amazon labor union. Our tech reporter Sebastian Herrera says the results show the challenges the union is facing.
What this shows is that Amazon is a much more difficult place to organize than maybe an Apple store or a Starbucks store, just by the nature of the size of these warehouses, whereas at the Apple stores or the Starbucks stores, those are much smaller places where employees can congregate more easily, communicate more easily, and that enables them to be able to pull off some of what you've seen from Apple. And Starbucks employees are really starting to get more success with their unionization efforts.
An Amazon spokeswoman said the company is glad workers chose to keep a direct relationship with the company. Union President Chris Smalls said the vote wasn't a loss, but an ongoing battle. And Microsoft has laid off some of its employees. The company didn't say how many workers were affected. In July, it said it planned to cut less than 1% of its workforce, but it didn't confirm whether this week's cuts are part of that plan. Microsoft employs more than 200,000 people, and its second quarter figures show the company's slowest earnings growth in 2 years. Its shares have fallen about 30% this year, in line with the tech-heavy NASDAQ. Coming up, Florida homeowners are grappling with the damage wrought by Ian and whether to rebuild houses that were damaged or destroyed. The key challenges after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Plus, save time by completing security questionnaires with Vanta AI. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ. That's VANTA.com/WSJ.
It's been less than a month since Hurricane Ian made landfall in Florida, wreaking havoc across the state. And now many homeowners are facing a daunting choice: rebuild or leave. Florida already has some of the strictest building codes in the nation, making the prospect of rebuilding a challenging and often costly endeavor. And the damage from Ian is extensive. An analysis from CoreLogic estimates that flood and wind losses will ultimately cost between $41 and $71 billion, including billions in uninsured flood losses. So where does that leave longtime homeowners? And what does it mean for Florida? Joining me now with more is Wall Street Journal real estate reporter Deborah Acosta. Hi, Deborah. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Anne-Marie.
Deborah, let's start with the basics on Florida's coastal building codes, which are among the strictest in the nation, due in large part to the damage caused by Hurricane Andrew in 1992. Tell us a little bit more about those codes.
That's right. The latest version of the building code was adopted now in 2020, and it includes provisions to seal roof decks to keep water out, for example. But they've been in place since 2002. And so there's long-standing requirements to install impact-resistant windows or shutters and ensure strong connections among the roof walls and the foundations of the homes. Many of them must be built to withstand 180-mile-per-hour winds. And in the Florida Keys, structures should withstand 200-mile-per-hour winds, for example. So some municipalities enforce stricter requirements depending on the location. The closer you are to the beach, for example, the more you're required to elevate your home. This, of course, does not include homes that were built long ago. If you don't make substantial improvements to an older home, you're not required to lift it higher, for example, or further secure the roof. And that's where you see the majority of the destruction.
So, Deborah, what has this meant for insurance premiums for homeowners on the Florida coast?
So it's a bit complicated. Florida has been struggling with insurance premiums even before Hurricane Ian hit. Over the past 2 years, many of Florida's carriers have suffered operating losses, not from hurricanes necessarily, but from what state officials say is excessive litigation over insurance claims and a proliferation of what insurers see as sham roof-related claims. And this has become like a little bit of a problem for the state, where you have a ton of these roof-related claims that insurers see as shams. And now that a hurricane has hit, it just exacerbates the problem even more, because they're going to have to pay out a lot of these claims. So those issues have contributed to double-digit rate increases for homeowners. And because of these high prices, many residents in this area did not carry flood insurance, for example.
It has been less than a month since Ian wreaked havoc across Florida. What have you heard from homeowners right now who are facing the prospect of rebuilding or moving?
So a lot of the folks that live in these areas are retirees on fixed incomes, and they bought their homes years ago. They were grandfathered in, so they are not up to code by any means. Because they never did any big renovations, they never had to bring it up to code. And so a lot of these homes were completely destroyed, or almost completely destroyed. Many of them were ripped from their foundations and are no longer there at all. And so for these folks, it's really tough to rebuild, because they have to rebuild the entire structure to these new codes, requiring them to build something that's a lot more resilient, but also a lot more expensive. And not only that, these folks are older and would have to wait maybe 2-3 years. Who knows how long it would take them to get these buildings back in tip-top shape. And they don't have that kind of time to wait around and want to be settled quickly. I chatted with one woman, Romaine Turner. She decided to stay in her home during the storm. You know, a lot of Floridians are used to hurricanes and have seen them come by, and unfortunately don't take the precautions of leaving their homes when these things are approaching. And anyway, she decided, this 84-year-old woman decided to stay in her home during the storm, and her neighbors also did the same. During the storm, her neighbor's cottage actually was thrown from its foundation, and both residents, an older couple, were flung out of one of the windows when the water was really high, and Romaine managed to pull them in through her window to save them. And after that harrowing experience, neither the couple nor Romaine are planning to come back to that community.
Deborah, how have the dynamics we've been talking about changed the demographics of Florida?
Well, we have an example in Mexico Beach on the Florida Panhandle, for example. The character of that particular area changed substantially after it was ravaged by Hurricane Michael in 2018. Building codes there were tightened in the aftermath, and many homeowners with no insurance sold and moved on. Investors then came in to build high-end gated communities and rental homes, and prices have soared, with multiple homes selling for upwards of $1 million this year, in an area where the average price of homes was around $271,000 in 2019. And so developers who I chatted with are saying that something very similar is going to probably happen in this area, Fort Myers Beach, and surrounding barrier islands. If developers were interested in buying up property in those areas, he said he could count on one hand the amount of properties that were 5 acres plus and near the water. Now that's completely changed, especially if residents decide to sell and move on. Developers can come in and buy up multiple lots, put them together, and build something larger like luxury condos, for example. And so a lot of developers are seeing that as a potential outcome of all of this.
That's Wall Street Journal real estate reporter Deborah Acosta. Deborah, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Anne-Marie.
And finally, there are about 58 million independent workers in the U.S., and more are going freelance all the time. McKinsey projects more than half of the U.S. workforce will be independent by 2030. That means a lot of people deciding on their own how much to charge their clients. And yet, despite inflation, freelancers seem reluctant to raise their rates. According to a survey last year by Fiverr, 70% of them haven't started charging more for their work. So how can freelancers go about getting higher pay? Freelancer and author Jamie Brindle advises his 250,000 social media followers to develop their rates on a project-to-project basis.
Say you're a graphic designer and your local cafe calls because they want a poster designed for their window to try and get some more foot traffic in. And the same day, Warner Brothers calls because they want a poster for the new Batman movie, right? It's the same job. It's a poster. They don't deserve the same price. It's not the same budget.
You can hear more from Brindle about how to demand what you're worth on this week's episode of our sister podcast, As We Work. And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fratoli for The Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.